Welcome to today's talk. We're going to talk about easy app management and deployments in IaaS under Azure Resource Manager. I'm a program manager in the Azure Compute team, Mahesh Thyagarajan. And today I have with me Ryan Jones, who's from the Azure Resource Manager team.
Hey, guys.
So we're going to go ahead and get started. To begin with, we'll talk about the services, primarily about the infrastructure services that we support on Azure platform. And we're going to focus more so on the APIs that were introduced under Azure Resource Manager in the last few months. In addition, we'll also be touching upon some important concepts and new features and scenarios that have been introduced under Azure Resource Manager as well. Okay, let's get started with a quick overview of IaaS and what it means to be under Azure Resource Manager. To begin with, primarily, I think from a virtual machine services standpoint, there are three fundamental components or services that makes up a virtual machine. The first thing is obviously compute. That would be the virtual machines. And we have constructs called as extensions that enables customers to easily manage their in-VM customization of their application, be it, or even the virtual machine itself. Storage is an inherent part of that part of the platform, which supports capabilities starting from blobs, tables, queues, and we also support Azure files. And the storage account constructs, we support a couple of different types of storage accounts, standard storage accounts and premium storage accounts for intensive applications. So, and obviously, a key part of the service is also networking. And from a networking standpoint, we support a slew of different services, starting from virtual networking capability that'll help you isolate your application on the cloud, and security groups for your isolation and security, and so on and so forth. We'll be touching about some of those aspects as we go along. Now, before we dive deep, with the introduction of Azure, with the introduction of the compute, network, and storage services under Azure Resource Manager, we've kind of modeled or changed some of the constructs. So in this slide, we're going to briefly touch on what has changed and what it means for you in how you actually start building your applications on Azure Resource Manager. So let's look at what we had, in the classic model or the V1, which has been supported in Azure for about 2.5 years now. So to begin with, in the classic model, a virtual machine was always as part of a cloud service. So you'd have to go create a cloud service, create a virtual machine inside it, and by default, you would get a public IP address that is associated with it. And then when you deploy the virtual machine, you have to choose the storage account that it goes to, and you could optionally choose the virtual network or the subnet that VM should belong to. And when we gave you the virtual IP address by default, it was actually a load balanced IP address. So every cloud service and a virtual machine that you spun up by default got an inbuilt or an implicit load balancer as part of the specification, and the IP address was assigned to the load balancer. Now let's look at what it means how those constructs have evolved or how we've decomposed them to make it easy for you to build some of your applications on top of IaaS virtual machines. So, from a construct standpoint, we've broken down or decomposed them as building blocks that allows you to construct any app. So from that standpoint, we have modeled network interfaces as a primary resource or a resource that can have its own lifecycle. And then virtual machine IP addresses or a public IP address is a resource by itself as well, which can be detached and attached to different virtual machines. And obviously, virtual networks were a resource before. And another key addition that we've added is load balancer. So we actually made load balancers now a first-class entity in the platform that allows you to easily bring nodes in and out of the load balancer. So at a high level, every virtual machine needs to have a NIC. So if you see that a VM will have a reference to a NIC, and then a NIC could potentially be associated as part of a subnet in a virtual network, or could also have its own public IP address. So you can actually have these references specified as part of the resource definition when you create them. And on top, for security and in isolation capabilities, we have network security groups. It used to be called as the endpoint ACLs capability in the past. So network security groups allows you to ACL down or a specific set of traffic that is coming inbound into your virtual machine. And in some cases, we also, you can also apply these network security groups directly to your subnet. And one capability that that is yet to be available on the V2 stack, which is coming very soon in the next few weeks, is the capability for express route support for virtual networks, and that is not supported yet. Okay, so with that, I want to just kind of touch on some of the key improvements that have been made in the platform. So one of the fundamental improvements that we've made is we've made the APIs more RESTful And we've also improved the performance of the APIs and primarily around the deployment performance of these APIs. And we'll look at some demos in how you can actually build and deploy scalable apps in a very short period of time. And we obviously decompose the networking resources in a very granular fashion, which allows you to control each one of the configuration individually. And you will see some advantages of these granular networking constructs when you integrate them with role-based access control. And we have support for template-based deployments. You know, Azure Resource Manager as a service and as a platform has existed for about a year and a half now. And the introduction of, we're going to talk more about the introduction of the IaaS under Azure Resource Manager. And as I mentioned, role-based access control is a key part of the support, with the new construct. Role-based access control is supported on the classic resources as well. However, once you apply, role-based access control on a classic resource, it doesn't, you can manage that resource through the Azure portal. It can only be managed through the Azure preview portal. So with the introduction of role-based access control for IaaS resources, you manage all of them just purely in the preview portal. Another key capability that doesn't exist in the classic, which is purely introduced under Azure, for the virtual machines under Azure Resource Manager, is the tags-based billing support. What this means is you can go configure tags on your resources for your IaaS resources, be it virtual network or a gateway or a storage account or a virtual machine. And these tags that you configure on the resource itself will propagate through to the bill at the end of the month, and you can actually view them. In addition, not necessarily at the end of the month, we also have the usages API, which you can subscribe to, where you can get data every couple of hours as well. So you pretty much this information is going to flow through the system and be available for you. So you can actually pivot based on, say, for example, how much did my engineering department spend, or how much did my finance department spend? And so your cloud spending could be controlled and better understood using the tagging capability. And we've also partnered with a lot of third-party vendors like Cloudyne, who also support or deeply integrate with our tagging capability to make sure you can understand and manage build in a better fashion. And another capability, which is something that a lot of customers who focus on highly available database workloads ask for, is the capability of three fault domains in an availability set. What this allows you to do is the capability where we can, when you deploy the VMs into an availability set, we physically place these virtual machines on three different isolated networks under racks. So this ensures that you have higher availability for those, higher resiliency for those apps, so they don't actually fail over, especially if they're in clustering workloads like SQL Always On and things like that. And as a quick jumpstart, we have a lot of templates that support that we've added. So there are about 120 odd templates that are available from the community for you to contribute, for you to look at. And at a high level, templates are idempotent. And we'll touch some aspects of that and how it is useful in case of IaaS. So it's idempotent in the sense that you can actually use the same template again and again for change management and updates. It enables orchestration, and we'll see some great examples of orchestration at an infrastructure level. We'll see great examples of orchestration at the application level where you can use extensions for in-VM orchestration. At a high level, we also enable simple rollback. It's great in dev and test scenarios. What we mean by that is if you're developing a template, developing an application template, and you want to go start, deploying it into a resource group, and then you find that there's something wrong or, the whole deployment failed, you can potentially choose to delete the entire resource group, redeploy the whole template again in another resource group if possible. So, and this is great, especially when you're doing dev and test deployments and writing your own custom scripts in configuring as well. And another important advancement the capability that Azure Resource Manager Template support is the capability where you can have your template reference any different resources that are supported on Azure Resource Manager. So it doesn't tie itself down to just compute or network or storage. You can have, a SQL database or a website for that matter in your template if that's what your app needs. So you can have a Redis cache defined in the same template file. So you just pick the different services, you design your architect, your application on Azure, and then you can build a template that constructs that entire app across the different services on Azure to go ahead and deploy. At a high level, templates are source files that are checked in, which defines the dependencies and can accept parameterized input and output. And we'll look at some samples, to make sure that you understand what I'm talking about. So right now, let's jump to a demo. Where I'll be showing a couple of things. One, I'll walk you through some basics of how a template file looks like, and then I'll do a deployment of a 40 VM scalable web tier app, which would go ahead and deploy in the matter of a few minutes. So there are a few important sections that you should look at. The first thing is a schema. So all the APIs in Azure typically are driven by a schema that is supported. So in this particular case, we have a template that leverages the compute network and storage resources, and the resources are defined in the schema, which allows Visual Studio to evaluate that. The parameters section, really, it defines, you know, it's obvious, it's the parameters that makes the template repeatable. So every time you use it, you know, you ensure that if you want to use the template again in another region or for another deployment, you can parameterize as much as possible to make the template repeatable. So in this case, you'll see some, standard parameters like the admin username, the password, and another important parameter which is relevant for this demo is the number of instances. So the number of instances here will directly correlate to the number of virtual machines that we will actually be spinning up from a single template deployment. So variables are more like runtime constants that you can define inside your template that you don't think you want to parameterize, because the number of parameters, the more you add, you know, parameters in your template, it's harder to kind of maintain and manage the parameter files and things like that. So it's generally recommended for values that don't change often. You know, you should evaluate the option of using variables. So in this case, you know, there are some subnet prefixes that we have defined, which we kind of prefix. It is usually not toggleable, not changed very often. So we kind of put them as, runtime constants or variables up here. So the most important section up here is the resources. So in this case, as you know, we're trying to spin up a 40 virtual machines and the dependent resources that it requires to come up. So the first thing that we need is a storage account, because in IaaS, every virtual machine and the disks that are required for the virtual machine to boot up are placed in a storage account. So that's what you'll see. The next thing here is an availability set. So as we are spinning up this 40 VM application in a web tier, we're trying to make sure that these are identical VMs. So we're trying to place them in an availability set so you can get the guarantee from the platform that these VMs will be highly available, placed across 3 fault domains and placed across different update domains to ensure that when the platform is rolling out a maintenance update, your VMs are actually still highly available and your app is highly available. And for every virtual machine that we're creating up here, we're trying to create a public IP address so it can actually be RDP'd or SSH'd into. This is always not required. Public IP address is not a mandatory resource on the virtual machine, so you can choose to ignore that. And as I mentioned previously, network interface is what carries the network configuration for a virtual machine, and you'll see the entire network configuration up here. At a high level, before we go deep into the virtual machine, I want to touch on a couple of concepts here so you understand what we're trying to do. The first construct here, when I mentioned that we're trying to spin up 40 virtual machines, we're not defining the 40 virtual machines explicitly in the template. So there are template language capabilities like copy up here, which allows you to define or deploy n number of the same resources again and again. So there are template language functions and capabilities that makes this simple. And if you look at the depends on, that's the section that defines the dependencies that our Azure Resource Manager will take in before it can actually spin up a resource. So very similar constructs apply here as well. As I mentioned, we use the copy function again here, even for the virtual machine. So the virtual machine can, n number of virtual machines can be created. And very similarly, we also have the dependencies defined. Within the virtual machine itself, there are a few different blocks that you should be aware of. The first thing is the availability set, which defines the availability and whether these VMs belong to a certain group that actually has platform guarantees for availability. It defines the hardware profile. In this particular case, it's the size of the virtual machine. Remember, we picked a standard D1 size when we picked up. It's one of that. The OS profile defines the configuration of the OS itself. So we're just defining a computer name, admin username, and password. You could also imagine the case where, you know, for Linux, we support SSH keys under this particular profile. The storage profile defines the configuration of the disks themselves. So in this particular case, we're referencing an image that comes from the definition from the parameters that we supported at the top, and the definition for the OS disk itself. Obviously, you can attach multiple data disks define multiple data disks right below here as well, and those data disks will be created during the creation of the VM. And we had a dependency referencing the network interface, and all that we do here is to make sure that we reference the appropriate network interface that was created as part of the copy loop function. So, you know, the network interface should also be ready, and that dependency depends on capability provides us that guarantee. One other important aspect that I do want to touch on is Visual Studio offers you the capability where you can quickly do validations for some of the templates that you construct and build out. So let's go ahead and kind of change this property, for example. So once I made that change, it'll actually immediately pop up saying, hey, the required property, let me go zoom in. So the required property, computer name, was not present. So this was one of the things that would make your template authoring a little bit easier as you start constructing them. So we definitely recommend you editing or evaluating building your templates using Visual Studio to get some early validation as you start building this out. Now, let's go ahead and deploy this. So you can go click on the project and say deploy. Let's go ahead and click a new deployment. Pick a resource group. You could pick any existing resource group, or you can actually go create a brand new resource group as well. In this case, I'm going to pick an existing resource group. So the deployment template is what we were looking at. And there's also a parameters file that goes along with it. So you can go edit the parameters file if you choose to do so. And in this case, if you look at it closely, I've actually gone ahead and tried to create 40 virtual machines. And I'm trying to deploy this in the West Europe region, so and so. You go ahead and save the password and then click deploy. So once I go ahead and click deploy, the entire deployment will start happening up here. All right, let's go back up here and see where the deployment is. As you can see, one of the first things that, when the request is posted up to Azure Resource Manager, it checks if the template is valid. So, we can get the verbose logging that states that the template is valid. And based on the definition that we had, you can see about 40 different public IP addresses being created, 40 network interfaces being created, and the virtual machines are already starting to get created. So imagine this case where, the creation of 40 virtual machines just started in less than about 10, 15 seconds. And you'll see that in about 2 to 2.5 minutes, all of these 40 virtual machines should be up and running. So which is, very helpful when you're deploying scalable apps on Azure. Okay, so now briefly, let's talk about how do you manage your application after you've deployed. So upgrade is a key scenario that, people think about and, think about management. So there are different ways you can actually upgrade your application. Let's say you deployed a SharePoint farm or you deployed a SQL Always-On cluster. So upgrade could be thought of different ways. So typically people, you can use PowerShell scripts or your CLI scripts, or even you can go and upgrade your virtual machines or some of the configuration in the portal. But templates do offer another capability for you to upgrade your application as well. So If you remember, we briefly mentioned that the templates are idempotent. What this means is that whatever you specify in the template for a particular resource type, that is the resource definition. So if you continue to use the same template again and post it back to Azure Resource Manager, you'd get the same response. There'd be no change. The template would run through and we'd tell you that the deployment is successful. So with that in mind, if you think about, and I'm going to show you a demo as well. So in the demo, what we're going to do is we're going to try to add a subnet. So let's assume the case where you've deployed an application and with a virtual network and a couple of virtual machines, so the app is up and running, but then you're evaluating the possibility of bringing another app into the same virtual network. But when you're bringing in the app, you're like, hey, I want to isolate the network, so let me go ahead and carve out a new subnet in the same virtual network before I go start doing it for other reasons. So you can evaluate the possibility where you can use the same template, just add the properties that you need for that particular virtual network, like adding a subnet and reposting that entire template again with the right parameters, and we'll make sure that only that particular resource is updated, and I'll show you a demo of how that actually works. So, and as I briefly mentioned, so you can use templates for your upgrade scenarios, or if you can choose, use templates primarily for your first-time deployment scenarios and then use automation scripts or other tools or portal for your management scenarios, if that makes more sense. From a manageability and auditing of all of this, there are operations in general in Azure across all the services are usually tracked up to 90 days. So you can go and look at the audit logs up in the portal, or there are also APIs available for you to look at all the operations that you did on Azure. So there are some critical scenarios where especially if you're dealing a lot with data, imagine a case where you actually have a storage account which contains HPI data or most of the data that is required for the application to run in production. So in some cases, if you want to protect accidental deletion, where you could accidentally click the delete resource group or run a script that would just remove Azure resource group, you can set these locks up on some of these resource types as well. So when you set the lock, this ensures that any such operation of removing Azure resource group does not accidentally delete the resource itself. So this, we support management locks to ensure you can protect against these pitfalls that you can have with the superpower that we're giving you with the increased manageability with Azure Resource Manager. So at a high level, first what I'm going to do is we're going to look at the resources in the resource group called Azure Con Demo 2. So if you look at it closely, there are about two VMs up here. There is a virtual network called as MyVNet, and then the storage accounts and the resources that are required. What we're going to do now is we're going to try to look at the virtual network properties. So we're going to look at the virtual network in this particular resource group. If you look at it closely, so the first thing that you'll see is that there is subnet 1 up here, and then there is subnet 2. So right now, there are about two subnets in this particular virtual network. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go switch back up to the template now. So let's look at the template. Let's look at the virtual networks section. So if you look at the virtual, this was the original template that was used to deploy this particular resource group and the resources in it. So as you can see, there was subnet 1 and there was a subnet 2 that was defined. Now what I'm going to do is I did an update. The only thing that is different on this particular template is that I added another subnet called a subnet 3. So all the other resources are exactly the same. The parameters that we originally defined are defined in the parameters file, and they're exactly the same as well. So let's now go ahead and look at how you can actually do an infrastructure map change in your application in a resource group in a simple way. So just go new Azure resource group deployment. Let's call it deployment 3. In this case, the resource group is AzureCon demo 2. We're going to pass the parameter file and then the template file. We looked at the Azure deploy update. That was the updated template file. So once you go ahead and deploy that, you can see that the validation is done. It checks if the template is valid, which it is. And it'll start you know, looking at all the resources and start creating them or updating them. In this particular case, if you look at it, the public IP address, there was no update. It quickly succeeded. You can see the same for the availability set. You can see the same for storage account. But if you look at it, the VNet was in a running state where it was trying to get updated. And then that succeeded as well. And now you'll slowly start the updates that will happen on the NIC and the VM. But at a high level, there are not really any changes. So the platform will return back immediately saying there were not many changes. So the update that you requested has actually succeeded. So let's just wait for a couple of minutes. And since this is a goal state driven system, we try to do all the operations with the properties that you've given, and then we'll complete them if there are no changes. And as you can see, these updates completed quickly, and the whole deployment is done. So given we use the same template, and the only update that we made in the template was on the virtual network itself, the update completed really fast. So let's go ahead back and look at the virtual network now. And if you look at the virtual network, you can now see that the subnet 3 is now added as part of the virtual network. So this is a quick example, a 200 level example, to ensure that you understand how change management can be done. But you can extend this to other scenarios as well. It is not just applicable to infrastructure. This is very highly applicable, especially when you're doing in-VM management and in-VM configuration using extensions. But this was a straightforward example that would just get you an idea of how to do change management. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Ryan, who's going to talk more about the Azure Resource Manager policies and the scenarios around it and how it's going to be powerful for you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mahesh. You know, it's really cool to see the things that people are doing with Resource Manager and IaaS now. That DataStax example really just exemplifies things that weren't previously possible.
Right.
So it's super exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with that in mind, what we're seeing is people are starting to use Resource Manager and Azure in ways and at scale that we'd never really seen before. And what we're starting to see is people want more control over how they consume the cloud. And so what we're trying to do is we're introducing a new feature called Azure Resource Manager Policies. And this lets you govern how people use the cloud on your terms. And I'd like to touch on, a couple, four key scenarios that we've heard from you that are important. Number one is for the resources and applications which are deployed to the cloud, I want to know who to charge back for those. I want to require departmental tags. Number two is I need to ensure that my applications are deployed in a geo-compliant manner. So how do I ensure that my resources are deployed to locations that meet my regulatory requirements? Number three, how do I curate what services people are able to use? Do I want people to only be able to use virtual machines? Do I want people to be able to use app services? So on and so forth. And then a final but very important scenario is, how do I enforce naming conventions for the resources that I deploy to the cloud? And so let's talk about a couple of key concepts that are needed to understand how policies work. Number one, policies are built as a default allow system. So this is different than how role-based access control works, which is a default deny system. In the case of policies, you define what actions or what resources would violate your policies and then you deny those things. Similar to RBAC, policies are described via policy definitions, which we'll speak to in a little bit, and they are applied via policy assignments. Now, as you guys are aware, with role-based access control assignments, these can be made at the subscription, at the resource group, or at the resource level, and these are inherited downstream. Policies work the exact same way. We didn't really want to introduce concepts that were fundamentally different from each other, so we've tried to keep them as similar as possible and as simple to use as possible. So, with that in mind, let's look at the basic structure for our policy language. You'll see at the top part of this, we have an if section where you can specify either a condition or a logical operator. And then below that, we have a then section where you define the effect of the policy, which can be either deny or audit that a policy violation has occurred. So, let's look at the set of logical operators that we have. There are three today. The first is not, just logical inverse. The second is and, logical and of all of the conditions. Now, because we use a JSON-style syntax, you'll notice we use the all of operator to represent and. We also have or, which is, of course, just a logical or of the conditions that you specify. And once again, because this is JSON, this is specified using the any of operator. So let's talk about how these conditions are structured that are nested inside those logical operators. We have equals, we have like, which allows you to pattern match with a single wildcard. We have contains, which looks for a string within a larger string. We have in, which looks to see whether or not a value occurs inside of an array of possible values. And then we have contains key, which looks for the existence of a particular key. And we'll come back to scenarios where this is super important. Now, what you might be thinking is, what are the different facets against which I can build and author policies? And we have two categories. One are the fields. These are things that actually look very similar to what you saw in Mahesh's template examples earlier. So you can use name, type, kind, locations, or tag.tagName as a field name to evaluate against. Additionally, we have sources for policy enforcement. And today, this is limited to action, okay? And so let's put these things together. We'll go through a couple of examples. And so this example here, what we do is we say, hey, if tags don't contain a key named cost center, deny the request. This goes back to our first scenario that we talked about earlier, which is if I don't know who to charge for this virtual machine or this data stacks cluster that Mahesh just provisioned for me, I don't want it to be provisioned,
yep.
Right? The next scenario that I want to show you is, hey, if locations aren't in Europe because I need to keep my data inside of the European Union, I want to deny creation of these resources. The next one, bear with me, it's a little bit smaller font, but Mahesh will really like this policy. What this does is this says, hey, I can create resource groups, compute network and storage things, but nothing else. So this will really help Mahesh's business grow a lot if everybody uses this policy. And then the final example that I wanted to show everybody is we know that everyone has a naming convention that they would like all of their resources to follow. However, we found that actually enforcing that naming policy is quite a challenge. And so what you'll see here is we look at the name field to ensure that it follows a name prefix, then a something, then a name suffix type pattern, okay? And so once you define these policies through the JSON that we've just described, you manage them through PowerShell, okay? And you'll see that we have commandlets for creating a policy definition, getting policy definitions or an individual policy definition, updating a policy definition, as well as removing a policy definition. And you'll see there's a consistent look and feel to these commandlets where you specify the policy name, the actual text of the policy, the JSON that we looked at in the preceding slides, the description of the policy, and this display name for the policy. So once you've created these policies, you then need to be able to assign them. And so you'll see we have a set of commandlets for assigning policies as well. You'll see that we create, get, or read, update, and remove these policy assignments. And so you'll see, once again, we have policy names, or policy. We have policy scopes, we have the policy definition, and then we have display name properties as well that you can set. So we've talked about how you can define or author your policies, how you can manage them through PowerShell, and yeah, that's about it. So I'd like to turn back over to Mahesh here.
All right, cool. Thanks, Ryan. That's very, very powerful, actually. Yeah, for most of the enterprise scenarios around chargeback, it's just going to be very powerful. All right. With that, I think we want to kind of wrap up and give you a quick summary of what we talked about today. So we talked about the introduction of virtual machines under Azure Resource Manager. We talked about how it's more scalable, faster, and improves the performance of deploying large-scale applications on Azure. We talked about how you can actually make sure that you can use these templates to deploy parallel configuration changes at the infrastructure layer, at the application layer, and also orchestrate between one of them. And we also talked about how you can, in a single click, deploy some of the most complex applications that just not sticks to one region, but a multi-region deployment from a single template file. We talked about how you can do repeatable deployments, do change management using config as code, where you can view the template file as your config or as code, which is responsible for managing your infrastructure on the cloud. We briefly touched on and talked about the different scenarios around how you use RBAC and billing integrated tagging. We talked about the policy scenarios, which makes it really easy to control and configure in a big enterprise level scenario of who does what and how the chargeback and other models work. Another key aspect that I want to briefly touch on is the scenario where all the compute, network, and storage capabilities and Azure Resource Manager capabilities that we talked about today is going to be available and is part of the consistency where we are going to ship this with Azure Stack as well. So we're going to bring the concepts and the tools and the services that we talked about today into Azure, into your Azure Stack environment, into your data center as well. And the last thing that I want to briefly talk about and touch on is that now that there are a couple of models in how you go deploy a classic resource and a classic virtual machine and a virtual machine under Resource Manager, we're evaluating and we're planning to support a capability where we will enable a metadata migration path where you can move the virtual machines that are in classic into Resource Manager. And you'll get more information and documentation coming out pretty soon on that topic. So with that, I'd like to thank Ryan for his time, and it was a great talk to introduce folks to some of the new things that we have been doing in the last few months.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mahesh, and I just encourage all of you to look at how you can leverage policies to govern your consumption of the cloud, whether it's ensuring you can charge back, whether it's deploying resources to a given location, whether it is using a curated set of services, or it's enforcing a naming convention. So thanks again for joining us today. Take care.